When researchers submit proposals to the National Institutes of Health to get funding, they don't indicate their race or ethnicity. But black researchers are a third less likely than other equally qualified researchers to receive NIH funding. That's according to a study by KU economics professor Donna Ginther, who researched the topic for the institutes in 2008. Earlier this week, Susan Wilson spoke with Ginther about her findings. Ginther says the medical community needs researchers who better reflect the demographics of the population.
Diversity gives a different perspective on issues related to science. So an example, the first knee replacement, right? The knee joint was developed, the artificial knee was developed by men, and they put artificial knees for men in women. Well, women's physical structure is different, and it took a woman joining the team to point out that these knees are not going to work for women. So if you get a diversity of perspectives, you get a diversity of approaches to science, and it leads to better science. So if everybody who's doing science is white and male, and there are issues that are related to race, ethnicity, and gender, and that's not reflected in the experience of scientists, you're going to get a very narrow perspective on science relative to something that will embrace the diversity of the population. And, you know, the NIH's mission is to improve the health of all Americans.
Tell me a little bit more about how you actually conducted the study.
Well, NIH said, here's our data. These are all of the applications for R01, which are the main research funding mechanism. R01 grants from 2000 to 2006. And as we sort of put the study together, we added more information about the researchers' education background, their research background, to try to understand those factors that would account for the success or lack of success in receiving NIH funding. So we took about a year to put the data together, and then we analyzed it. And my goal was to explain the gap. You had this gap in the raw data, and if we could explain the gap by training and education and research productivity, then, you know, pinpointing the factors that affected the gap would allow you to have better policy to address the gap. Well, we found the gap. We weren't really able to explain it. And at that point, we presented the results to the NIH leadership, and they wanted, you know, they thought it would be a good idea to get this information out in the open so that they could start affecting policy. And so that's when we sent the paper to Science, and it was reviewed and then published in August of 2011.
Now, when you say you weren't able to explain the findings, I know you looked at some factors. What factors did you look at, and why was it difficult to explain what was happening?
So we looked at their educational background, whether or not they received NIH training, their affiliation, the number of publications and citations they had. These are all factors that you would expect to have an influence on whether or not you receive NIH funding. And they were good predictors for receiving NIH funding for the whole group, but they didn't really explain why black and Asian applicants were less likely to receive funding. We were able to explain the Asian difference, and that was 80% of applicants in the Asian group are from foreign countries, and it could be language issues that affect how clearly they write proposals. We haven't actually read the proposals, but that would be a potential explanation. Once you looked at U.S.-born Asians, there's no difference between them and whites in terms of getting funding. But we still had this unexplained gap between black and white researchers. Black researchers were 13 percentage points. We were less likely than whites to get funded. We were able to explain about a third of that, so that they turned out to be 10 percentage points less likely, still making them one third less likely than whites to receive funding.
Do black researchers tend to research areas different than other researchers, and do they tend to be in areas like that maybe NIH views as less scientific, more community-based, that they're not as interested in funding? Is that a factor?
We tried looking at that, and it was a very complicated problem. We know that if you have human subjects in your research, the funding hurdle is higher. But for blacks using human subjects, actually in medical schools, blacks using human subjects were disadvantaged. So if you were an MD, a black MD using human subjects, you were disadvantaged to a black MD not using human subjects. So what we found, we did a follow-up study that was published in November of last year, and we found that black MDs working in medical schools, if they were doing clinical research, that explained part of the black-white funding gap. And if for blacks not doing clinical research in medical schools, we found that they were not as disadvantaged. So there is some evidence that the topics that black researchers do may influence their funding probabilities. But sort of like if you look at the whole scope of what NIH funds, we tried to sort of narrow down and see if there were race, ethnicity differences in topics, but we weren't able to really discern that, those patterns in the time that we had. And as a result, it's a topic for future research.
We're talking today with KU economist Donna Genther about a recent study she did regarding NIH research and minority participation. When we get into your recommendations, what kinds of recommendations do you have to remedy this situation?
You're left with this unexplained gap. There are two potential and unpalatable explanations. The first is that there's bias in the review process. And the second is that the proposals are not of high enough quality to be funded. And there are two different approaches to addressing these explanations. So it's sort of like you have, you know, if you're a medical doctor, you have symptoms. You don't know what the underlying disease is necessarily, but you start treating the symptoms. And so the way you treat the symptom of bias in the review process is what NIH is doing, which is experimenting with having anonymous reviews to see if a proposal that was submitted with all of the information on the researcher is treated differently than if you remove all of that information.
Is this to address any possibility of unconscious bias? There's been a lot of studies done about, you know, the biases we have when we look at candidates for a job or candidates for admission to school.
Yes, it's trying to see if that is playing a role in the review process. And last year, the National Science Foundation experimented with this. They took a full proposal, and then they took a subset of those proposals and said, write up 4 pages describing your research, but don't put your name on it. And they sent those proposals back through the review process, and the proposals with names attached turned out to be reviewed differently than the proposals without the names.
Now, were some of the names like ethnic sounding or?
I just read a report about the NSF
okay,
process.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, it could be that it's removing ethnic sounding names, but it could be you know, there's a Matthew effect and a halo effect. So the Matthew effect is that you have a great track record, so it's expected that in the future you'll continue to have a great track record. So people who are established, well-known scholars are given the benefit of the doubt. That's how I interpret the Matthew effect. Then there's the halo effect, meaning if you're from a prestigious institution, you're treated differently than if you're from a less prestigious institution. So if, say, for example, you're from Johns Hopkins, you know, one of the premier medical schools in the country, then a proposal from Hopkins is, again, sort of because you're at Hopkins, you're given more of a boost. And actually, we see that in our data. If you're at a very top-ranked institution, you're significantly more likely to get funded. Now, the question is it that the, you know, John Hopkins is able to pick the best scientists, or is it the fact that they're at John Hopkins that improves their outcomes? We don't know. These are just correlations. They're not causal.
Well, you know, in terms of the national budget, research is something where dollars seem to be research is an area where dollars seem to be shrinking. So how do you respond to the critics who say, look, for any researcher, you have to fight for every grant dollar that you get these days because the resources are so short. And why should race, ethnicity have anything to do with it?
Well, you know, my perspective is it's not race, ethnicity. It's about sort of leveling the playing field, giving everybody the opportunity to be successful and letting them compete on science. I mean, when I wrote my first NIH grant, you know, it was rejected. It didn't even get a score, which meant that it was in the lower half of the quality ranking. And that's because I didn't know how to write an NIH grant. I asked a friend of mine who had NIH funding if I could take a look at her grant. And wow, you know, it's a different, there's a whole different way of doing it than other grants that I'd written before. Well, if I hadn't had that help, I would never have received NIH funding in the first place. And it's about sort of this tacit knowledge, these rules or sort of ways of doing things that unless somebody takes you aside and tells you, you're not going to know. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that says people tend to mentor those who look like them, right? People tend to work with people who have shared experiences. And if you don't have, you know, if there are very few black researchers, who's going to mentor the new researchers coming in? I mean, so I think that just equipping everyone with the same opportunity to be successful, giving them sort of the knowledge and the know-how about how to do the NIH grant correctly will help to sort of level the playing field and make everybody better at writing their science.
Well, Donna, thank you for joining us today on KC Currents, and best wishes in your future research.
Thank you, Susan. It's my pleasure.
Donna Ginther is an economics professor and director of the Center for Science, Technology, and Economic Policy at the Institute for Policy and Social Research at KU. She spoke to KC Currents, Susan Wilson. Ginther's study has prompted the National Institutes of Health to fund undergraduate research and to create a national researcher mentoring network. These programs are designed to help researchers gain experience and understand the funding process better. The NIH is also funding more studies by Ginther to look more closely at the funding gap.
After the break, we remember jazz saxophonist Eddie Saunders. This is KC Currents.